Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, alongside a very, I would say, festive floral paisley. Mr. Mark Ellis.
This is the summertime apparel that I'm comfortable in, Jacqueline, because what the studio audience can't see is the shorts that I'm rocking. Like, once it's above 90 degrees and we've seen how hot parts of the country have gotten, everything is about comfort, is about cash, is about breathability. So if it's not making the most fashion-forward statement, I'm okay with that for the next couple months.
No, man, you look like you're going to, like, the neighborhood potluck looking stylishly, though.
I look like the newly single dad.
Honestly.
I signed the papers.
But not as bitter. Not as bitter. I think it was like a mutual parting and you guys didn't have kids, so you really just argued about the Xbox.
Oh, and the dog, which is now getting very close to my real life. Speaking of fashion accessories,
yes.
I see somebody got their nails did for this very specific episode. A certain shade.
They're
a little lanterny.
They are a little lanterny. They're definitely bright. I will say, even though I don't wear long nails anymore because I play an instrument that doesn't allow that to happen.
They look great.
The only reason why I got my nails done was basically to like gossip with a friend of ours. And like, honestly, that's what women do. The nails are not the purpose. The gossip is really the purpose. Just like it's not about Will. It's really about
you are
heart.
Good.
It really is, man.
And did you see our guest just kind of like posture straighten when he heard that
excited
comic
to talk
book
about
line?
That exact
and
thing.
He wore green too.
I thought ahead. I thought of this last night. I set this aside, like going to school. Like I'll be tired in the morning. I know
if
what I'm wearing.
You combine your shade of green and Jacqueline's nails, it equals Green Lantern on your own.
Honestly,
yes.
I could destroy you with these nails right now. That folks, the voice that you saw pop in there, that is Koi Jandrew from the Koi Cast. He's joining us back on the podcast again to talk about, in case you can't hint, this is the movie that nearly broke Ryan Reynolds, the 2011 DC first effort at what would be their cinematic universe. We call it DC Iron Man Green Lantern. No, I mean, look, I didn't call it that. That's what the marketing folks at WB did. It is 26% rotten on the tomato meter, 45% audience score. It is definitely ranked on our editorial piece, the worst superhero movies at all time. Number one being Max Steel. God, I forgot about that one. And Green Lantern's at number 30 with 26. So as bad as that is, it's not as bad as you would think. Koi, you're like grinning in a very like, you know, Gargamel type way right now. You are literally about to go get the Smurfs.
Like he's petting a kitty.
There's 29 seriously. Worse movies than this, according to this. I'm just impressed that it's 30. I rarely say this, but Rotten Tomatoes is right about it being rotten.
Wow.
And I am rarely a negative person. I'm rarely someone. This is a movie that could have been made by AI, and it's the exact cautionary tale of why we're striking. This is the thing. So I'm excited to talk about it because it's topical right now with the WGA strike, the SAG strike, and throwing money at something doesn't make it good, and this is Exhibit A. So this is the movie to paint on the wall of what not to do.
I mean, all love and support to the unions as well. We echo that sentiment, and I feel like this movie may be a little controversial today because, Jacqueline, if you ask me if Rotten Tomatoes is wrong or right about that 28%, that's not even, it's 26%. Excuse me, RoboCop 2 is 28%, the highest of the bad superhero movies on that list. I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. I think this is a better movie than people give it credit for. At the time, I said it was fresh. Back on Schmoesno, I gave it a fresh review, and I can still feel Christian's eyes just burning into my skull when I gave it 3 out of 5, because he did not like this movie. And I'm not standing by it should necessarily be fresh, but I think it's a lot better than that 26% number. I might be the crazy one here. I don't know.
So this is the thing. I like this movie better than its number, but I am a pretty big connoisseur of the DC animated universe.
Yes,
and
there's
tons of examples of better Green Lantern stories. So it's definitely one of those issues where this is the same issue I had with the first Suicide Squad. I've already seen them do this right. Like, how do you mess it up just by making it people? Like, two dimension, y'all nailed this. And then when you made it live action, it's crap.
And they cast well. The problem is also that it's good people.
Yeah.
So it's really a matter of how did you mess up the, it's a beautiful cake where they poured salt instead of sugar.
I will agree with you on that. Similar to Suicide Squad. And similar also, I think when we dive into this, when we sort of like peel it back a little bit, ego and hubris is always the culprit behind a lot of studio ineptitude.
Not the living planet ego.
No!
Russell Crowe.
Mixing my universes
up. Lantern flies by him and he goes, and that's the,
by the way,
weird cameo.
There is an ego in the DC universe that is a Green Lantern that is also like a planet.
But there you go.
Yeah, so you did not cross as much as you would think.
I know my stuff.
I hope you do, because you are going to be responsible for detailing exactly what this story is, sir. Before we get into it, I just want to really quickly, if you can, recap Green Lantern.
I'm going to recap it. This is what we call a light dusting, okay, Coy? So I don't have all the planets. I don't have all the names of the other lanterns that are not from planet Earth. I know Hal Jordan, and he's played by, I really hope that his career takes off. The guy from Two Girls, Two Guys Are Going to Pizza Place. Yeah. Ryan Reynolds plays Hal Jordan, and he is a kick-ass fighter pilot on planet Earth, but that's just planet Earth. Out there in the cosmos, stuff's going wrong. There's a nefarious source afoot that has taken out planets, civilizations, and now 4 lanterns are gone. So these lanterns are sort of like the guardians of the universe, and they're spread all over the place. And when one of them dies, it's like a tragedy. 4 of them die, it's like, oh, we really got to work on something. So if one of them dies, their ring of power that's green kind of gets passed to somebody else who is deemed worthy by said ring. This ring finds its way to Earth and to Hal Jordan right after he crashes a plane in a test, and everybody's mad at him in the military. He gets this thing. Is he worthy? Will he save the day? Not only from some wacky scientists on Earth, but also the parallax that is coming to here with bad intent. So, big time stuff here. This is not like we're saving a cat out of a tree. This is literally our entire existence is at stake.
I completely agree. That is a great synopsis. Also, just want to add, like, as a little speed bump, there's a blink and you miss it. Definitely looks different, Taika Waititi. And I think somebody that knows Ryan Reynolds kind of well that's in this one with a little Blake Lively.
That's the best thing to come out of this movie. Is that
their
couple.
Infidelity? Anyway, let's
their
move
children.
On
I was
to,
saying their children.
Let's
they're wonderful
move,
kids.
He was married when they shot this movie.
Was
to somebody else. Everyone, let's go ahead.
Tim cannot save us fast enough.
2 minutes about infidelity, Tim.
Listen, they talked about it on talk shows. I'm just repeating the story. Let's go ahead. And before we get into movie talk, let's hear what the critics were saying about this film at the time. I do believe they did not mince words. Let's hear from Tim.
2 minutes with Tim.
It may sound incredible today, but 2011 was a surprisingly light year for comic book movies. 2012 would be the year of The Avengers, The Dark Knight Rises, and The Amazing Spider-Man. But according to Box Office Mojo, not a single superhero film cracked the top 5 year-end box office for 2011. Thor was 8th, Captain America The First Avenger was 10th, and X-Men First Class was 14th. So there was a sense among the pundits that superhero fatigue might finally be setting in. And Exhibit A was the absolute critical and commercial drubbing that Green Lantern received. In terms of the box office, it was 24th on the year-end list, just below The King's Speech and Horrible Bosses. And critics found it to be a mishmash of incoherent storytelling and overblown CGI, though Ryan Reynolds was regularly singled out for praise. Green Lantern is rotten at 26% on the tomato meter with 250 reviews, and it has a 45% audience score. And just for the record, we have covered a lot of DC movies on this podcast, most recently Zack Snyder's Justice League. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Dana Stevens of Slate wrote, "Even by the standards of the current run of mediocre comic book movies, this one stands out for its egregious shoddiness." However, in a fresh review, David Sexton of the London Evening Standard wrote, "I liked it much more than, say, Thor, precisely because it's so openly childish. That approach seems right for the material." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "Noisy, overproduced, and thinly written, Green Lantern squanders an impressive budget and decades of comics mythology." So that's Green Lantern. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. Let those who worship evil's might beware of their power. Podcasting with insight. Back to you, folks.
Man, I honestly, like, I think we know where you stand, Coy. So I think me and Mark are sitting. I'm just going to go right to movie talk because I, like, we have to discuss the fact that they were even discussing superhero fatigue back in 2011.
We're like, so that, young.
Listen,
so innocent.
Cue the music, Brian. I got to go right there. Cue the music. Okay, this is my thing. People don't read anymore. I just want to, like, put this out here because this is my problem with superhero fatigue. Hollywood has never had an original idea. Some of the first things they adapted, The Sheik, remember Rudolph Valentino? That was a book by Edith Head. Gone with the Wind. We used to adapt books back when we had books. Now we have comic books, and that's what we adapt. There will be no superhero fatigue because they can't think of any original ideas. It used to be books. Then it became articles and stupid magazine features when people stopped reading that. And now it's graphic novels.
Right. It's like, based off an article.
That's it.
Well, okay.
Eventually it'll be TikToks. Like, I don't know what to tell you. We just recreate stories and put them on the screen.
Memes. Cocaine Bear is on screen, you guys.
Exactly.
We got memes.
We've got memes.
And we've got trying to be sentient, self-aware companies becoming movies.
We're living in an age of artifice.
Sorry, I just had to soapbox
that. Every novel, though, it's not like Nathaniel Hawthorne would sit down and be like, how do I create a superhero origin story that's going to stand out? So when I hear superhero fatigue, more often than not, I think about going through the same numbers that we've already seen with similar looking heroes, you know? And so I feel like and it was already sort of in the lexicon, and that's before what Tim mentioned, the 2012 summer when you had all these big comic book movies coming out. With Green Lantern, like, I still today, if you give me an origin story of a superhero that feels a little unique and adds some different elements to it, I'm in. And that is what hooked me when I saw Green Lantern the first time. And rewatching it last night, that's what hooked me again, is that I like Ryan Reynolds so much. And he is so good at being this cocky fighter pilot. But his sense of humor is so quick. His wit is so sharp that it did feel like he was separating himself from the Bruce Waynes. And even from the Tony Starks, because Tony Stark is such like a nihilistic kind of dick at the beginning of Iron Man, where you still want to root for a guy like Hal Jordan because you do believe that there's good in there that you can see more evident than with an Iron Man initially.
What made this like and just chap your ass initially? Because I'm guessing you just hated this from the jump.
But the potential. It's a movie that has all of the right ingredients. It's the director of Casino Royale. It's starring the most charming person maybe alive. It's got so many elements that are really interesting, like having fear be the great paralyzer, having the parallax and paralyze. Like, it's all very linear. But the scene where you've got all these kids running away afraid and this giant amorphous blob of fear descending on it, there's so much more commentary that can be made. You've got the like beautiful story of Hector Hammond and Hal Jordan being son figures to someone that doesn't respect either of them because he wants the perfect mix of them. You've got Hal trying to be like a brother to him, but it not being received well. You've got that brother being jealous of the Blake Lively character and Harold Carol. There's so many elements that could allow for a Shakespearean story. There's so much of like will versus fear. There's so much of like brotherhood and Hamlet. There's so much of what he represents to me is, this is extremely polarizing, but what cops should be. Okay. And I love the idea of making a cautionary tale of not showing what a cop on the edge versus a cop that's failed his oath can be. Mm. So when I look at the space cops that are the Green Lantern Corps, it's when things go wrong, how do we judge someone with that much power? How do we look at this thing? They don't touch on any of that. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, you put a incredible director behind a property that's got so much nuance, and they do what someone said about their review, like they make it a child story. When you get an actor that is charm incarnate that can literally make a joke like that's impossible to watch my back and make it work.
It's a good line.
It's a great line. Why is that not the movie? So when I look at all these pieces and the puzzle comes together, and the puzzle I've spent years of my life loving is literally like poop. Like, I put it together and it's just poop. It really hurt me personally and professionally to see so much squandered. And because 2008 had just given us Iron Man, it had just warmed up the MCU. I knew Green Lantern had so much weight on it because I knew that was DC going like, okay, now's our time to shine. I've always been Marvel and DC, but because of how rough DC has been, everyone thinks I'm a Marvel guy. I'm a comic guy. So this movie kind of started my like, please DC, just let me love you. Like, this feels like a battered relationship because I've wanted to show what DC can be. And I think the way they're going to be readjusting things is correct. But in the meantime, 2011 was a long time ago. It's been 14 years when the promo started coming out 14 years ago of this, of me being like, DC's got it. It'll work out. And then
we were still in the Bale universe.
Man of Steel was coming out after this.
With Batman. I mean, people were pinning their hopes on Superman for the future, but you also were releasing it under this guise of what Nolan is doing with Batman. And I have my thoughts about The Dark Knight Rises, which aren't all that positive, but that came out the next year.
Right.
We were just anticipating. We were coming off Batman Begins and The Dark Knight.
I mean, you're still living in The Dark Knight hangover. I think there's something interesting. I do not know when I became aware of the fact that Martin Campbell did not want to cast Bradley Cooper.
He wanted to cast Bradley Cooper.
He didn't get to cast Bradley Cooper. But that part of the story was almost immediately, from everything that I know about this story, whatever I know about it and that information, were very close together. There was only a small amount of time that I ever thought that Ryan Reynolds was the guy for this movie. Because if you look at, it's funny that you mentioned Martin Campbell and James Bond. If you look at like how he did Daniel Craig for that one, he fought very hard to cast him at that time. And they wanted him was the main reason, because the pitch that he had for Casino Royale was so good. What he had written for that screenplay, what he did for that. And they had just come off the silliness that was the latter half of the Pierce Brosnan, James Bond. And so he kind of got to call his shot. I really think that like his ego just could not handle the idea of crafting a movie around the guy that he didn't think was the guy. Because what you learn from those directors, that's like way more puppeteer marionette than you realize on a lot of those sets.
And it's shorthand, and it's a conversation that has to translate on screen. And when you have the right duo, it's magic. Like, I think what we have with Ryan Reynolds, and I think that was also a huge issue. I love Ryan Reynolds like so much that when he was cast in this, I was like, he'd be a better Flash. He'd be the Deadpool. And he then was, but I knew how much he wanted to play a superhero and how much he fought for Deadpool. This was after X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
So I knew that Deadpool was the right role for him. And I also saw this as like, you took away 2 years of him maybe fighting for Deadpool. So there were a lot of elements behind the scenes where I was like, he's not Hal Jordan to me. Bradley Cooper could have been. And that was also an element of, if you've got someone that doesn't want to necessarily play this, it's not working out. Like, I think Ryan didn't watch this until the lockdown and did a Twitter charity live stream.
Yeah,
he'd never seen this movie until like 2021.
That's hysterical, because so, like I saw interviews from him and from Blake Lively where they both said like the thing that kind of hooked them on wanting to do Green Lantern at all, caring about the character, was meeting with their director, Martin Campbell. And it might've been that meeting when they were still considering their casting options. So Martin Campbell gives this great pitch, and then he's like, after the meeting, he's like, I don't think Ryan might be right.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ryan's like, I think Green Lantern could work.
Yeah.
So you do have this odd sort of pairing. But the other thing that I think sort of spelled some, I don't want to say doom for this movie, but a little bit of caution in a way that you didn't have up to that point with the MCU or the Batman movies with Nolan, was that a trailer was released at Comic-Con. And this was probably one of the last years where like Hall H wasn't streaming anything. It was just like, this is just for Comic-Con people initially. And they mentioned that the footage was not finished. And so everybody saw it at Hall H and lost their goddamn minds. Even though the special effects weren't all there yet, fans knew that. The Hall H people know. They're like, okay, this isn't finished. They're still giving us something. And they got really excited. But then I guess the trailer or a version of it made it to the mainstream. It was attached to some big movie. And people started having a negative reaction towards the visual effects in the same way that like folks freaked out about Sonic the Hedgehog's teeth.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, and about like the way that Oscar Isaac looked as Apocalypse in the X-Men. And that was sort of the thing that was like, wait a minute. Should we temper our expectations? Do we need to course correct? And maybe that's when the studio got their hands on it more than Martin Campbell wanted, because that was his other big complaint about the movie that we got, is that he had a movie that he still thinks could have worked, but the studio got in there and started slicing and dicing.
I would also say this too. I remember that sort of backlash to it. And this was, again, this is the heyday of the internet, websites transferring over to what ended up being internet channels and platforms and content creators. This was, Redbox Media, like those guys, mm-hmm. the very early days of the SJ folks. Anyway, the thing I think is more interesting about where it sort of like morphed to was the panic that they could not be Marvel, because that first Iron Man trailer, that first Avengers, they had already, I think, started talking about the Avengers trailers. Like, they had already started like hinting that I think it was the same Comic-Con where they had brought the Avengers out when they showed the Green Lantern mm-hmm. thing. And it was sort of like, yeah, that's what y'all got. Look what we have coming. Look at what is literally down the road from us. And it's, there's no comparison now to what that was like back then, and just the level of success that Marvel had already had, and how I think now this movie coming out today would have probably done better than The Flash.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
But Coy, your optimism, I think, was warranted back then for the DC universe because it's like you're putting together a sports team where you see Marvel and they've done a great job of building these Avengers. Captain America was successful in its first outing. Thor was, in addition to the behemoth that was Iron Man. But then you look at DC and you're like, okay, well, we haven't had a great movie outside of Batman in a minute, but we still have that one last Batman movie. Could that connect to something else in Snyder's universe? We didn't know the answers to that. We still had Superman on deck. Taking swings and like, okay, Superman's going to be a huge hit. So if we can have a movie like Green Lantern come out and be good, then you're right in the arms race with Marvel.
And look at the cast. I mean, you put these people on paper and then you say the director of the best Bond in years, in my opinion.
And you also did GoldenEye, I think.
Yeah, you did GoldenEye and then into Casino Royale. Yeah. And all of the things made sense on paper. And I think that was a huge part of the disappointment is I went in thinking we would get what would rival Iron Man because of the thing they assembled. And even though I never thought Ryan Reynolds was right for Hal Jordan, I thought he was right for anything. Like, I would see a Ryan Reynolds movie no matter what he did. I went and saw Turbo. Like, I tried. And I didn't. It never made sense to me all the way, but it made sense enough that I was like, in a Justice League, you need that levity. So maybe that's why they're putting Hal Jordan a little less golden god, a little less golden age, and a little more comedic. Maybe that's because, you know, you've got a more stoic Henry Cavill as your man. Like, I was already forgiving the casting in my mind. And then when I saw the movie, I was like, oh, they went with the space cloud that we didn't learn from with Fantastic Four. They went with this broad strokes version of the story that just felt very, I said at the top, it feels like an AI movie. Like when you watch the scenes of him in the fighter pilot element, there is no stakes. You feel none of the weight you feel when Tom Cruise gets in that because he's not actually flying the thing. They didn't even pretend to try. Like I want, what this could have been is Top Gun meets Space Cops. And instead it's, what if we tell the same origin story I've always told, but we cast someone really charming. It never felt like it had weight to it. I felt no peril for anyone. And that's not acceptable in a post-90s comic world landscape because this becomes the movie that everyone worries will cause the bubble to burst. This becomes the, oh, they're all the same because this was.
Yeah, right. It's
very commercial. That's the other thing that people forgot is they sold. This is actually what changed Warner Brothers marketing. They actually changed their entire marketing strategy after this movie. They literally did because if you look at how they marketed, not Man of Steel, but by the time they get to Batman versus Superman, that is a different way of looking at these movies, looking at how they were still doing the whole like Batman, Nike, let me go like make it as commercial because Christopher Nolan didn't allow them to do that.
Yeah, very consciously, which was good. The bad credit card went away.
Yeah.
It went back in the wallet.
Yeah.
But I think we...
He wasn't swinging by McDonald's on the way home anymore.
But do you
I'll never leave the cave without it.
Do you think the commercialization... Because I do remember there was like Taco Bell ads for this movie. There was like Pepsi stuff.
I think that was a Bay issue. I think it spread to this. Because remember the Transformers movies were like, what if we're a Coca-Cola ad?
True.
So I think that then they saw that. They were like, okay, if we got the overhead of $200 million, what if we... And it started that process where I know certain movies in theaters right now we're getting kickback with that. I think it was the beginning of that journey, but that's all because the movies cost too much. Mm. Like, it's at the end of the day, you spend $200 million on a movie that you're hoping starts a universe. That's a hell of a swing. Whereas Iron Man was a not castable at the time ex-movie star, an unknown director with a C-list character versus... I don't care how bad RIPD and Turbo did. It's still Ryan Reynolds. It's still the guy who made Gold. This is a much more expensive kickoff.
Yeah.
So I think it's they had to go commercial.
It's still shocking to me that you could tell me that a movie did $220 million of business worldwide and was a flop. The movie in particular, though, it feels to me like this is a movie that does appeal more to an audience that isn't as ingratiated with the comic book lore as somebody like you are, where like I can go see this and be more surface level. That was an enjoyable comic book movie. I mean, I even look at the review from somebody who I'm personally buddies with, which is an honor to say, Leonard Maltin. Mm. He says it isn't innovative, it isn't deep, the characters aren't particularly well developed, but I still had a good time watching Green Lantern. And that's what I would say about this. The movie loses its way in the second half for me. And by the end, we're kind of... Sarsgaard has this weird way of yelling and it sounds, and it just, it's not like, it doesn't hit your ear in a menacing way. It's just kind of comical. There's a giant fart cloud at one point. But, and so that's when I'm like, can we just, let's just try to stick the landing and not blow up and not just kill all the passengers on the way down. But for you, is it part of the lore is so deep and the mythology is so expansive that... Not only were they not able to cram enough in here, they sort of have to eschew a lot of it altogether just because they're trying to tell a story in 2 hours.
I think even if I wasn't a Green Lantern comic fan, the idea of willpower versus fear not being addressed in a well-rounded way would affect me.
Like, okay.
Even if I was removed and just a moviegoer, this is like a, you know, Jungian. This is like a beautiful hero's journey. And without that element to be... weighted, I would be bothered by it. Then you add to that my comic book knowledge, you add to that those things. But even removing this, I try to go into movies and I try to see movies twice, once as a comic fan, once as a movie fan. And in this case, both of me would have been disappointed. Because even as a movie fan, there's so many scenes. The great example I gave before was the pilot scene. At no point did I think that they were flying. At no point did I feel like there was any weight or stakes. But then you add to that, by the time we get to any sort of villainous plot point, we don't care about why it's doing it. It's just consuming. And that felt very two-dimensional. That felt like you couldn't make me care less. So by the time we get to Sinestro at the end with the yellow, there's no version of me that's like, oh no, fear. Like, and you should. It's so primal. Like, human beings are so emotionally driven. I love the idea of Hal Jordan being the first human and the human element being the thing that makes him a strong lantern. It's literally like a line of dialogue throughout the movie that's a little heavy-handed. They repeat it a lot. But him being like, my humanity is my strength. They never made that true. At no point was his emotionality something that caused him strength that really felt like it translated. And this is a story about emotion. It's about fear and will. And at no point did emotion come to play. So you have actors this good and you have writers this good and you have a director this good. Why did I feel zero?
I think it also should say Taika was already an Oscar nominee at this point. Angela was, as well as Tim being a winner. Yeah, because Taika got a nominee for a short.
Oh, interesting.
For Boy. And that was actually, I think, what sort of like, because he did
so
this
good.
And then he did his directing on like Flight of the Conchords. And this was sort of him.
I love seeing
out.
Him. I totally forgot he was in this movie. I don't know that I ever like knew as a piece of like trivia that he was in the movie.
He looks so white.
You see him in the control room and you're like, oh my God, that's Taika. But it's unmistakable. Like I did do a double take.
Yes.
Because like his hair is different and like he's got glasses on. He's in the control room. I'm like,
Clark Kented.
I'm like, I like this guy so much. Can we have a movie about why do I like this guy? I'm like, oh my God, that's Taika.
Do you guys remember that was half the promo tour for Free Guy? They were like, time working together. We've never met before. They made it a whole bit in Free Guy.
That's hysterical.
Which I love.
They did. And this is, again, if you look at him in Free Guy and then you look at him in that, like he looks totally different. The hair is a huge part of it, but it's the beard and
I just also can't understand how, and removing again my comic books lore, taking away my knowledge of this, the choice to make a CGI face mask and suit is so distracting in 2011. I don't think they should do it now, much less 12 years ago. The whole time I'm looking at where the suit meets his neck, the whole time I'm looking at the odd uncanny valley of a human being, because Kilowog looks great because you don't see that creature in life, so you don't know what to not see, and that the eyes aren't like a superimposed human eye, but when you see Ryan Reynolds with like an uncanny valley, it distracts.
Almost like, and the first time we see that uncanny valley is where his eyes are look artificial and glassy. I understand why they made that choice in that moment when he first recites the Lantern Creed, and like it actually does choose him at that point when he's just like chilling. He's like, oh my god, this is okay. He said it's a good joke because he says by the power of Grayskull, trying to summon anything to get this out, which is what any kid of a certain age would have done. But then he does get connected to this thing, and that's when his eyes change. And it's almost like in that moment, I wonder if Martin Campbell would have done the same thing for Bradley Cooper, the guy that he wanted, because it's almost like he didn't trust Ryan Reynolds to convey this incredibly dynamic shift in who he is, that he had to do some CGI stuff to do it. Because I think Ryan Reynolds is the actor of a caliber who could pull that off without any sort of artifice, but it's almost like the movie didn't trust him to do that. And so to telegraph that message that, no, this guy is now a lantern, we got to do some CGI.
I think this is more of a decision that's made logistically on set that then has like bigger ramifications. This is one of those first examples.
And it might not even been made by Martin Campbell. No, that's a fair point.
I think it might have been a question of like, hey, these masks are not conducive to acting. In general.
Oh, once he gets the mask on, it's...
You know what I mean?
You lose a lot of that humanity that Corey's talking about.
And so I think their thought is, well, if we can't actually get it to play through, let's animate it. And then also, for continuity and just feasibility's sake, do we want him to have the mask on in the scene? Do we not want him to have the mask on in the scene? Mm-hmm. And we have now the flexibility to choose either or, when in actuality, they should have just made choices. You know what I mean? Like, I think it was one of those things where you have to remember, they're filming this entire thing probably on a closed soundstage with, like, tennis balls everywhere.
Yeah.
There's no people. And I think they just wanted a lot of flexibility for the editors because they knew this was going to spend a lot of time there basically finding itself.
And Green Lantern has the white eyes under so they were trying to find a way, I think, to make comic fans happy and failing, but trying to be like, look, we did the thing, but also you can see that it's Ryan Reynolds because we got to make it marketable. Look, he'll take it off and seems to Blake Lively because they have romance. Like, a lot of it feels very much like, when do we have it work?
Yeah.
And I think that really distracts from, I mean, this was 2011. Ryan Reynolds had just done like Chaos Theory and a bunch of really good indies that were like showing off his dramatic chops.
And the proposal was like a huge giant movie in 2009, I think.
Like, Ryan Reynolds is one of the great movie stars, but had a little bit of rockiness. So I feel like this was meant to be the big comeback turn after The Proposal, which was, you know, a rom-com that's not going to have the same weight as a summer blockbuster. I think this was supposed to be something entirely different. And I think Bradley Cooper didn't want to commit to that kind of like lifestyle. Like, to this day, I think Bradley Cooper is a perfect Hal Jordan. If you see like Burnt or any of his more dramatic chops, like, that's more Hal Jordan to me. Like, there's a grit to it. But I think they wanted to make Ryan Reynolds the movie star that's going to carry this franchise, because this would have been the flagship DC movie. I think they wanted him to be like a 10-picture deal.
I think you find out too, like, they like having relationships with people. It's like, oh, we liked you in this movie, even though that movie didn't work out. Let's build something around you.
Right.
Like, that is the reason why like other things sort of happen that way. Is there any scene that sort of like you like?
I mean, the one joke about your back, that was funny to me.
A lot of his humor works.
Yeah.
A lot of his humor when he's allowed to do it. And most of this is the first act of the movie, but a lot of it does work.
And they feel like ad-libs, which is probably why they work, because it's not someone telling him to be funny. It's Ryan Reynolds being like, I'm the funniest.
And I wonder if that is also the problem, because the thing I always struggle about this movie is they didn't vibe, the comedy and the story.
Yeah.
But anyway,
a scene I really liked, there's a moment where he floats in and lands in the background. And there's one moment where my brain goes like, it's seeing a comic book come to life. It's seeing the pulsating green. It's seeing like what that would look like in the suit. And there's a few scenes of him flying that aren't on his face, but it's him like flying around where you see like this really cool blend of musculature and alien tech and all those things. So visually, as much as I hated the suit, there were a couple moments that I went, oh, a comic come to life, because they captured it for a moment, but it's literally like on the dark of space. And like, it's only those things. And then it would be what Ryan Reynolds brings to lines of dialogue that shouldn't work. There's a couple times when like he's saying the oath and I'm like, yeah. And there's a couple times where he's talking about it, kind of his transformation between the Playboy fighter pilot into a man worthy. Those elements are like the power of Ryan Reynolds' acting, where it's charm, humility. It's him going from being childish to childlike that I really feel are the character that Ryan chose him to be, but they still don't feel like who I think Hal is. So every favorite moment, there's still an asterisk of, I like this because Ryan, not because the movie did a thing.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for me because my favorite scenes are all with a little caveat of like, well, that looks like a comic book come to life. That I shouldn't be thinking that during a movie. I should be enjoying the movie. Or I shouldn't be thinking, I like Ryan's version of this. I should be thinking like, man, I'm seeing Hal Jordan.
So I think it's just an enjoyable ride. I'm not giving this any Pulitzers, but there's some scenes I like think are cool. Is there one for you?
The first film to earn the Pulitzer Prize for Peace. The Nobel Peace Prize is awarded to Green Lantern.
Green Lantern brought Oscars, great peace.
You know what I mean?
Any Nobel Peace Prize winner up to them would be like, I don't want this thing anymore. Please, I'm good.
Can we get taken off this list?
Sorry.
It's like Oscar. Armageddon being a Criterion film? Nah. Might have validated the whole thing.
I mean, but the other redeeming value of this for me, and it's kind of a weird thing, is I love watching the other lanterns commiserate because they're not joyless. They just are so serious. But I love how they handle pressure because like stuff's going wrong all over the universe right now. And they handle it like coaches who like your quarterback just threw a pick six and it got taken the other way. And they're just looking at the play sheet. They're on to the next play. They're on to Cincinnati.
They're like,
you know?
They're very Jedi-like. If you're thinking about the current sports analogy, they're very much like the women's national team need to be going into this next match.
We'll probably have already known their fate.
Oh, I know. They will. But
you guys reminded me. Kilowog and Jeffrey Rush. Those scenes I loved.
Yes.
Kilowog training, Jeffrey Rush's performance, anything that where they were full CGI, not like a blend of it, that looked amazing, especially for the time. And
Oscar
winner
Jeffrey Rush, forgot about that.
Mark Strong is actually in a different movie, and I love the movie he's in. So Mark Strong scenes are immaculate because it's practical. His scarring underneath the pink skin, the fact that I'm buying a pink skin mustachioed alien.
He lost so much weight for that role too. They he literally did get kind of skinny. They made him skinnier in the actual imagining of him, but like
Right, and I still think, you know, as much as it was unrealized expectations, I did like the mid-credit scene, too, where he turns, I'm like, that it was cool in the moment. And even watching it last night, I was like, well, I know this ain't going anywhere now, but it's cool. Still kind of fun, you know? It's like the post-credit scene in Encino Man now. I don't think we're ever getting another one, but they said maybe, and
to this
it's fun
day,
to dream.
I would have rather had seen one of these guys pop up in the Flash end credit scene. I would have rather seen, that landing, because and that would have worked for me as like a what if that we'll never get.
I won't put it past the powers that be to, you know, I don't want to talk about upcoming projects current with the current temperature in Hollywood, but I wouldn't put it past anybody to have, even as just like a wink and a nod, to put somebody from this into some sort of cameo post-credit scene, even if it's just like a Howard the Duck Guardians of the Galaxy thing.
And I'd be happy with it. I don't hate it that much, but I definitely... My disappointment is still as strong, but now I've accepted it.
Were you when you saw the trailer for this, were you like losing your mind, or were you initially like, wait a minute, did they miss the boat on this?
It was early enough in the superhero game that I was just freaking out that Green Lantern was on screen.
Yeah.
At this point, I think it was just like, oh my God, someone knows who Hal Jordan is, but me, because this was in the era of like me trying to like get people to care about anything.
Does anybody want to go to a bar and talk Green Lantern? Send tweet.
Yeah, no one responds. But like four likes and one's my mom. Like that was that era. Like that was what that was.
The days of what we used to have Twitter.
2011 was not deep into anyone like knowing what this was. It was still like, oh, a comic book movie is exciting because it's novel. Mm-hmm. Superhero fatigue is we all laughed. It wasn't a thing yet. So I think even in 2011, the thrill
they
of
talked
new
about it at that time. I do remember them
but
talking.
I think it was
like we had just gotten a run of like good comic book movies in a row. And it was almost like don't talk to the pitcher throwing a perfect game.
Yeah.
Right.
Because in the 90s, you got good comic book movies, but then they were followed by, oh, well, that's successful. So now let's just try to recreate it and sell a bunch of toys or do something dumb. Like every property started out okay and then started to go downhill fast.
Like we get an okay Fantastic Four and then they do Silver Surfer.
Sure,
we get
the
first Spider-Man, which we kind of enjoyed, and then we get the second, which we're like...
I would put this Green Lantern...
Amazing Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm like, Spider-Man 2 is pretty solid.
No, not the Tobey one. I meant the reboot.
This time.
Amazing
you could go
Spider-Man.
Back to the 90s, and I would say I feel like Green Lantern is a lot like Batman Forever, where they're trying to put some serious stuff in here. Mm-hmm. And I do think Joel Schumacher cared about making a good Batman movie, but there was so much studio pressure to do these other things and to sell merch and to do all these other things that a lot of Batman's humanity, I feel like, got lost in that movie, even though they did harp on what he's been through and the duality of Bruce Wayne, Batman. It just never hit home for me in Batman Forever the way it did in the first two movies. And I feel like the same thing kind of went wrong here with Green Lantern. Corey, you talk about the humanity, like you feel like it's there, but it just never gets utilized as an asset. And I think that that's why this movie, and also the visual way that it comes off, does remind me a lot of Batman Forever. For better, more for worse.
And I think the Forever cut of the Schumacher cut might be amazing. Like, there's rumor, you know, that Val Kilmer had these incredible scenes of nuance and Bruce Wayne's pathos and experience. I'd love to see that because I'm a huge Schumacher fan. Like, Lost Boys is one of my favorite movies of all time.
And Val Kilmer, dude, he's just coming out of his Jim Morrison phase. Like, show me that.
He was not along before it. Like, there's a lot of potential. And much like this movie, the ingredients are there, but they put salt instead of sugar.
But another thing, though, Schumacher said the day that they filmed the last scene of Batman Forever, get that guy off my set.
Yeah.
Director's
working with actor. That's a big, but that's why you also see people working with the same people again.
Like, I didn't know that.
Fincher. Yeah,
literally the last
Fincher
shot.
And Pitt, Scorsese and Leo, that shorthand is what makes, like, if you look at your favorite movies, a lot of times that's because of a duo.
Also, too, I think the crafting of that character for whatever the actor brings to it, it is going to be molded in their absence in the editing room.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's interesting when you watch a lot of actors now that are way more particular in the pre-production about working things out and making sure they understand exactly what they want to do with these roles, is because a lot of actors have been like, I gave a performance on set that was this, and what I saw on the other side of it was not. And I think movies like this are a testament to that, because I don't know if everything that Ryan Reynolds, and forgive me on this, played up in this served the movie as good as it could have.
I think having takes
that he's like being himself actually hurts the movie, because then you can't put in those things that you want to see.
I honestly think that I said at the top, the best thing to come out of this is the beautiful, you know, relationship and kids that Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds have. But my second thing is Deadpool. Like, I don't think without X-Men Origins Wolverine, like, just brutalizing his boy, and then this experience of him being like, nope, not doing that again, he would be as mandatorily hands-on as he is with, and we're not going to talk about the future, but with the present, I do believe that the maximum effort he puts into his sports team, into his gin, into his commercial company, into all the things he does, is because every time he let go of the steering wheel, someone drove that into a bank.
Yeah.
Like, the way that everything went wrong for him, I feel like his whole team and every director he worked with, now he's like, hey, by the way, we're not going to debut a trailer at D23. We're going to film something with me and Hugh on the couch. We're going to leak it a week later. Like, the way he handles stuff now is, I'm not going to let you ruin what I made. And I know I put my whole into this, and my whole body wants to be part of this experience, because I don't think anyone else could play Deadpool, because as much as he's good at the jokes and the humor, even his mime work in the suit without being able to see his face is because of Ryan Reynolds, because the writing is him reshaping
you
it.
You
like,
are
this-
so good at this because you took a movie that you loathe and you made it into... So you don't like this superhero origin story movie, but you love it as part of the superhero origin
of
story.
Ryan Reynolds. The Ryan Reynolds origin story that began. This
we
is
don't
the
have aviation gin without Green Lantern.
The pearls falling is this movie. These are my pearls.
I think Blade Trinity and Wolverine origins were like the first seeds in that, but I don't disagree with you. This was a part of it. I also think the test footage for Deadpool sitting on the shelf for over a year was part of that.
Yeah,
like, let's also remember, like, what he has now was not supposed to be.
No.
None of it was supposed to be. I think that is more of it. Like, when he finally was able to, like, cheat, basically.
Well, the line in the movie that it's, you know, one of my favorite anecdotes about that whole movie is the fact that they were supposed to have a third act that was a big shootout and it had to get cut because of the budget. So he leaves his guns in the car and then he says the line, all right, let's do this, maximum effort, which is the name of his company now. Literally an improv line from an improv moment became the basis of Ryan Reynolds' whole thing. And this, I think, along with those other examples, is how this all exists. So I don't think it's worth the cost of this because we have one of the best entertainers working right now.
I hope I never have a Green Lantern moment because I enjoy my naps. Like, I don't want to be motivated. I'm done. All right.
That's it.
Yeah. I get out of bed. I do my shows. Now I need to sleep. Don't motivate me anymore.
And he's working out the whole time.
Yeah. I don't want to motivate you and I don't want to do any slander, but there's an entire, I believe it's on Jimmy Kimmel, where Blake Lively talks about how she went on a double date with Ryan Reynolds and they were both with other people and literally their dates were like, yo.
When Harry Met Sally?
Like, this is weird.
I mean, maybe it's my French last name, but I think that if you find the right person late in life, however you got there,
dude,
you know, life
it's giving,
happens.
It's giving the trailers were not separated on set, and now we're seeing the evidence. That is all I will say. We are living in a post-SpongeBob, Ariana Grande, post-Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. I have no idea what did happen, but I know the timeline is very suspicious. That's it for us
They're
on Movie
happy.
Talk.
She's good.
They're She's so good. Happy.
Look, they are the ones that talked about this on national television. I am just the one that went back and put two and two together. That is it for us, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take it to our mailbag. Brian, cue the music. I'm not slandering them. They said it. They said this. They said they're on a date and their significant others are like, y'all should be together.
I love when Jacqueline hosts this show because she's Why? Like, here's the juiciest morsel and dessert.
And my brain is like, I see no better Instagram post between couples than the two of them making fun of each other, and that's worth all the trauma.
I see.
Also is the origin story. The trauma of this landing them together.
Facts. There it is.
They got to keep it cute. All right. Bringing it into the mailbag, we have Brian Brian Castlin. I know that Batman Forever was briefly mentioned in the mailbag segment before, but I would like to hear more on your thoughts in a full episode. It says at 39%. Haven't we done Batman Forever? I'd love to see it at the 60% or even 55%. So much craft in this movie. It doesn't match the tone of Burton's movies, but that's the point of a reboot. It gets wrongly grouped in with Batman and Robin. It's so much better. Thanks for your time. I'm a huge fan. Hey, Brian. Thanks for listening, sir.
I hope Brian wasn't listening to my take on Batman Forever because he might have turned off the podcast.
I dig Batman and Forever for nothing else other than the soundtrack. But again,
yep,
this was a different time. And Val Kilmer looks really good as Batman. Like he looks good. He looks good as Batman.
He does.
Fits the part in that, like, I'm rich and I know it. Like, Christian Bale also pulled that off. Like, you need a little meanness in your Batman.
People always trump the soundtrack of Batman Forever being great, which it is. The tracks on there are awesome. The thing I'll never forgive the Batman movies for doing after Burton is ditching the Danny Elfman score. You want to make your own score? Fine. I hate the score, the hero score in Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. It disgusts me. I do not like it. I don't know who did the composer. I'm sure it was great. I don't like that track at all. It's bad anyway for me. And in particular, when you compare it to what we had with the Elfman score.
I will say this about Elfman. Is same thing with also with Hans Zimmer. Is they're like ridiculous metalheads that make these, like,
you can tell.
It shows.
Bombast.
It does show. But when you look at their orchestrations from like an orchestration like standpoint, you will see just like the composition is not metal. They're basically like taking Handel, but make it metal. Like, it's like the bones underneath it are like these very complex orchestrations. Sort of the similar way, like, Ludwig Göransson and Nicholas Britell are hip hop heads who just take Bach and like turn that up and like twerk it out. It's so funny to watch.
You
that,
can tell
though.
Which one of the three of us has a grand piano in their house.
Yep. You're not wrong. But I will say it's interesting to see those things parallel with like what culture's focus is.
Yes.
Because right now we are living in a very hip hop centric age and Ludwig is able to be the guy orchestrating everything, even Star Wars. And then you've got how rock based the 90s and 2000s were, like even alt rock. It makes sense that Hans was the guy then. But what is really interesting to me is the 80s depressive, like leading into grunge era was Danny Elfman. So it's really interesting which composers get popular by their undercurrent of sound, no matter what their scores are. Don't have a piano, but it fascinates me.
John Williams in 78 was Superman. I mean, that's pretty much any like great tooth metal band.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
basically Def Leppard on stage. And it's awesome.
And it doesn't have to parallel, but it's interesting which ones do seem to succeed because of the culture sound at the time. Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to throw all of y'all off really quickly to let you know that Trent Reznor, Mr. Nine Inch Nails, dude is a soul artist trapped in a rocker's body. Because if you look at all of his stuff, it's like
so
melodic.
And that's why
he
works with Fincher so well. Because Fincher's just so upset. Like, all of his stuff is like, why can't more people murder less or more? I can't decide what I want.
Like, this dude is like way closer to like Cat Stevenson or Joni Mitchell with like the soulful, like, let me tell you why.
But then Atticus Ross like brings it up. Like, the energy gets higher. Yes. So when they make something like soul, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. No.
I love.
I did like a scoring Green Lantern too, just to put a button on
just
it.
Just to put it on
actually,
there.
The music I was digging.
Yeah,
I was
digging. Who does this one? Who did this one?
That's a great
it was
question.
So rock heavy, but it was so funny because like the new metal era was like kind of dipping at the time. Like we were just getting out of Jet Li's The One, having Disturbed on it. And we go into this like very like while they're traveling through space. And I was like, what a strange, disparate sound.
A different time of day. Koi, sir, this has been really great. Why don't you tell folks where they can find you and what you're working on?
You can hunt me down at Real Rejects. I got a little show over there called Koi's Comic Corner where you might tell I like comics a lot. And I dive into all the stuff going on in the world of comics as well as their adaptations. I'm on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Koi Jandro. And generally trying to do as many cons as possible because I love this culture, but I think the internet has made it everything that we fought against. We made these things to be a moral compass. We made them to be agnostic church. We made them to bring us together. And instead we decided that they should fight each other and we should hate everyone that slightly disagrees with us because the internet is a mess. So I like cons because it's a celebration instead of a punishment. So find me at a con and find a good corner of the internet to love stuff against. That's what it's for.
That's why he's such a great Comic-Con host. The answer is James Newton Howard, your boy.
Oh, wow. Newton Howard. Yes, I do love Newton Howard. He's got a lot of the scores that I like.
I have a thing that I need to plug too, Jack.
I'm getting to you. Okay. I'm going to get to you.
I have a contest. I need y'all to help me win.
Let me get him his recommendation, and then I was going to tee you up like a golf tee, sir.
Okay.
On the green, tee you up.
You're my Steve Williams?
Yes.
A recommendation. Yes. I want to recommend people check out. Well, you know, we were just talking about hip hop and this show ended before the strike, so it feels appropriate to pitch the ever loving hell out of Wu-Tang and American Saga.
Yeah.
Its final season was this year, and I feel like it's one of the better shows that no one's talking about. I feel like a lot of shows get their time in the sun, like The Bear is exceptional, but everybody's talking about it. An American Saga is the Avengers of hip-hop. People don't realize how much went into what RZA did to set up what modern hip-hop is, what the blending of those sounds was, and everything we've talked about here in the wrong way, they did right, and it changed music forever, and this show is able to manage to be a drama, a crime thriller, a musical biopic, and all those things while giving love to each of its many, many cast members and telling an important story of the history of music that really sets up what music is today. So if you love the journey of what comic book is from Iron Man to Avengers, and if you love the journey of what we've built from these shared universes and love hip hop, it is the best possible show on TV.
I dig it. I've interviewed a lot of the cast from that one. I will say that's a great recommendation. I have another recommendation, and is that you listen to whatever Mark is about to tell us about, because apparently you want us to make you as popular someplace else as you are with us here.
Yeah, look, this is the last bastion of motivation I have, okay? And then I'm done for the rest of this life, and we'll see where the next one takes me. So I did this this news show. KTLA is the local morning news here in LA, and they hit me up about coming in and doing stand-up in at their studio on Saturday morning during the news, like 10 a.m., and I'm like, yeah, why not? I love a good challenge. I came in. It's part of this comedy contest that they have going on all summer. And it was a really fun set. The crew's great. I had a blast. And so if y'all want to vote for me, the term is like the giggliest of the giggle, whatever the name is. Voting opens August 19th. So it's this weekend. And I think voting is only like 4 days long, something like that. So August 19th, you can just vote for your boy, Mark Ellis. I'll post on all my social media, as well as the entire set that I did. Because it was like a Tonight Show style set, but you only have like 7 people in the crowd. Because it's the morning news.
Yeah. It's half awake.
That's a dry room.
It was fun to riff on it. You know, it's like I've never followed a horse being airlifted to safety before.
Yeah,
so
it's
a new experience for me as a comic, and it was a fun contest. So you want to vote for me? KTLA News.
It's called the Summer of Funny.
KTLA
News. That was Brian
News.
Yelling from the cheap seats.
What a good producer he is.
He's a good producer. He's producing, hopefully, a wind freezer. I want an update on how this goes.
Okay. Social media at Mark Ellis Live. That's where you can get the info.
Awesome. Boy, it was really great to see you again, sir. It's always good to hear your perspective. Again, you're really good at this. As my co-host has said,
I like stuff.
You know what you're doing, sir. Want to remind everyone, you can be like Brian and remind us of a movie that we should have already talked about before. You can email us at rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. I appreciate you, Brian. Subscribe, rate, review, tell your friends. Most importantly, tell us. We have a great opportunity right now. We're going to be definitely looking back on a lot of our nostalgia sort of like movies and picks. So please let us know. So you can point us in the right direction. And we'll see you guys next time doing I Don't Know What with I Don't Know Who, right?
It could be a video game movie.
It could be a video game movie.
Could it, but probably not.
We don't know, though.
Yeah, could have been.
Could have been.
You don't know.
Honestly, we really don't know.
We so love we're keeping just, you on your toes.
So we're just going to leave and we're going to tell you guys to listen again. Thanks for listening. Bye, y'all.